On November 7th, will the right of an unborn child to live prevail, or will the right of a mother to kill that unborn child prevail? We'll find out Tuesday, but find out what you need to know to make an informed decision today on principles and policies. Hi, I'm Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. I'm going to be looking at issue one today. I've been talking about doing this for quite a while, and now I'm going to get it done. What are we going to talk about? Well, first of all, we're going to look at the language. We're going to hear some of the absolute nonsense that's being spread by the yes on issue one people. And then we're going to spend a lot more time looking at what the problem is with the language of the amendment to the Ohio Constitution. Embedded in that language is some of the problems that the passage of issue one will without doubt bring with it. Issue one is so vague and so open-ended that essentially it's written so that a court will be the place where, rather than, for instance, with the legislature, where it's supposed to be. This is a modern problem with people's understanding of the law. The courts are not supposed to make law. The courts are supposed to enforce law. But under our modern way of thinking about it, and legislatures have fallen in this trap. Legislators and the legislatures have fallen into the trap that, well, we'll write certain language in there that'll keep everybody happy, and then we'll let the courts hash it out. That's not what they're supposed to do. They are supposed to write a law that is specific, and essentially the courts can apply with proper jurisprudence. In other words, they can read the language, see what it means, see what it says, and although we all know out there that courts sometimes just simply reinterpret words. This is why we have problems with the Second Amendment, is because the court looks at the language and says that's not really what that means. It means something else entirely. Well, folks, are there ways to get rid of judges who apply that kind of law? Yes, there are. And one of them is impeachment. And we're really afraid to impeach judges for anything other than serious criminal activity. I've mentioned this before. My mother used to live, when my mom was alive, she lived in West Palm Beach, Florida. And her congressman was a guy named L.C. Hastings. Now, L.C. Hastings had been a federal judge and he was impeached and convicted and removed from office from the federal bench. In other words, he was a federal court judge, and he was impeached and removed from office for corruption. I mean, not just a little bit, for all kinds of bad things that L.C. Hastings did. So what did the people of West Palm Beach do? They said, oh, this horrible injustice of having this grifter removed from the federal bench. We need to make sure that he continues on in government, and they elected him to Congress. And he ran the usual thing, the usual paranoid. They didn't like what I was doing from the bench, so they ginned up these charges. There were no ginned up charges. L.C. Hastings was a grifter. But he served, I don't remember how many terms in Congress. It was a bunch. I think he got removed in the 80s and immediately went into Congress and served until his death. But that's the kind of thing we run into, and these are the kind of people who end up in judgeships, and these are the kind of people who should not be basically interpreting law that says one thing as having it say another thing. Well, the way that makes it easy on judges like Elsie Hastings is to, not just Elsie Hastings anymore. All you got to do is look at the nonsense going on with the January 6th trials, where the word, insurrection is thrown about, like the people know what they're talking about and they don't. Insurrection has a specific meaning. It's an armed revolt with the purpose of taking over a government. Nobody was trying to do that. People were protesting what they believed to be a stolen election, what I believe to be a stolen election. And they were demanding that Congress send those results back to the states for recertification before they would certify the election as complete. And it's beginning to look like the FBI sent people in and rabble-roused and found the hardcores and got them to engage in riot inside the walls of Congress. Well, that can't be allowed. I'm with prosecutors on that point. That should have been prosecuted. In fact, it happens all the time. It just happened, 2 weeks ago? A group went in and took over offices, but the problem is it wasn't an insurrection because they were liberal groups just exercising their right to protest and to seek redress of grievances. Folks, it just depends on who's doing the protesting and who's in charge. That's not the way it's supposed to be. The laws are supposed to be clear, and the laws are clear. You cannot call a protest and a riot inside the Capitol building as an insurrection, because an insurrection involves armed participants. The only person who was shot in the Capitol was a woman who was shot in the back by a Capitol policeman who said he was in fear of his life. He couldn't have been in fear of his life. The woman had her back to him. Can I exactly explain his motivations? No, I can't. Unfortunately, I don't want to get into the race thing, but it was a black policeman and a white woman, and he shot her in the back. Had that been done the opposite, had it been a white policeman and a black woman, you know what would have happened. There would have been further riots. The part of Washington, D.C. would burn. Other major cities would burn, but it didn't happen. Why? Because people outraged, yes, but people don't, conservatives don't burn their own neighborhoods down because someone was shot by a policeman. That's just not the case. Why not? I don't know. We can't go into that. But the whole point is that you can change definitions to make things happen that didn't happen. There was no... there was no insurrection on January 6th. The fact is that there was a riot, and that should have been punished, and there was damage to property, and there was theft. That can't be allowed. And I stand four square for prosecution of those individuals. Okay, that's not really the topic today. We're 9 minutes in. I haven't really talked about... we're talking about issue one. And why are we talking... why did I begin with this, what you might call a rant against... some of these issues with judges and changing language. Well, I'm going to go over issue one. I think we're going to listen to an advertisement that is against issue one, and I'm going to point out, I think there's some deficiencies in the ad, but nobody listens to me. I'm just a dumb radio commentator on a small Midwestern radio station, who does a podcast as well of this program. That being said, let's listen to this ad, put out by, I think it's the See the Language people, which protect women, Ohio, as I think who put this out. Is it you know, is it a fair and balanced approach? No. Why am I playing it? Because we need to talk about what they're talking about, and we need to clarify some things. So I'll break in and talk. Well, this thing's about 6 minutes long, and I'll break in and talk when it becomes necessary.
What is Ohio Issue 1, and what does it mean?
Issue 1 is a constitutional amendment, which means it will be added to the highest level of law in the state of Ohio. All forms of government, including the Ohio legislature and the Ohio courts, must conform to the words of the Constitution.
So what is the language Ohio voters are being asked to approve?
Every word in a constitutional amendment matters. When the provisions of this measure are challenged, the courts will presume that the people of Ohio meant every word on the page.
That's an important consideration. Will the courts consider that that's exactly what? Maybe, maybe not. Sometimes the courts ignore completely the language of an amendment. Now remember, this is an amendment. This is not a law, except insofar as it's the law that the government must follow. That's what a lot of people don't get right. They don't get right the fact that an amendment is the law that the government must follow. The Constitution is a law that the government must follow. Okay? Generally, it flows down into the legislation that we have to live under as the people. But the legislature is enjoined from doing certain things. If a law was passed at the Ohio legislature, I'm not saying this is even being thought about, but I'm giving a ridiculous hyperbolic example, that we had to perform some kind of burned sacrifice of human beings in order to show our fealty to name an entity, that we are worshiping Moloch. Let's say the Ohio legislature passed such a law. Is it lawful? Well, first of all, that's a direct violation of the Ohio Constitution. It's a direct violation of the federal Constitution, and it's a direct violation of God's law. Sadly, God's law does not necessarily find its way into the Constitution, but a Constitution complete with its amendments are law that the government must follow. And judges are supposed to know that language and know how to apply it. Do they necessarily? You and I both know that's not necessarily the case. Okay, here we go.
If definitions are lacking or certain clauses are left intentionally vague, the courts will presume the amendment was open for interpretation.
And that's the bottom line. If you, the more vague the language is, the more wiggle room that the judiciary has to make the decision. If, for instance, the legislature would look at the language and say, okay, there's wiggle room there. We can pass this, this, and this, and this. It becomes the job of the courts to determine whether it violates the language of the amendment or the Constitution or not. And the more vague it is, the easier it is for a liberal judge to come in and say, oh, here's what this actually means. And when people on our side say, well, that's not what it means. Oh, you can't say that. I'm the legal expert. I'm determining that this is what it is. We have seen with the Ohio Supreme Court, which, you know, much was made of the fact that it has a Republican majority. The fact is that it's still a liberal court. It's not as liberal as courts in other states, but it is. So that language thing and the vagueness of it is a very important consideration. Okay, back to it.
What other choice will they have? Many people have reviewed this language and have come away with more questions than answers. Here are just a few.
What is the new right being created and placed in the Constitution?
Let's stop right there. This question proceeds from the false notion that government can create rights. Government cannot create rights. People get this wrong all the time. We want the right to do this. We want the right to do that. Government cannot create rights. Only God gives you rights. God creates rights. Okay, you will have the privilege under law of doing these things. I disagree with this part of the language that new rights are being created. They will be called rights, but you know, calling a hot dog a flower does not simply mean that the hot dog is now a flower. It's a hot dog. And the fact is that rights are created by God, not by government.
Because the actual words state, every individual has a right to make and carry out one's own reproductive decisions.
For the most part, that's true. Within bounds. If a right comes from God, God allows you to make decisions on your own reproductive choices within the bounds of not murdering the baby. And, there's a question about whether you can alter your reproductive organs. Now, I have a situation in my own family where I have a relative, an in-law, who is a type 1 brittle diabetic, and she was told flat out, never have a baby. It will probably kill you. Now, she's in better shape now than she ever was when she got married, came into the family. Nonetheless, she had a tubal ligation. Was that her right to do that? I think in this case, in some cases, yes. Vasectomies for couples that are still viable reproductively and want to continue to have the intimacy and can't do any more babies, like in their 40s. You could do more babies, but you really can't financially, you can't physically. Having babies in your 40s is tough. It's exhausting. Just taking care of the grandkids. We in our 60s, we know how much energy goes into it. So what we're talking about here, the vagueness of this language means that any number of decisions are involved. The most important of one of which is being able to kill your baby. That's the bottom line. That's what this is about. It can be extended, and they're going to talk about this a little bit, not enough as far as I'm concerned. It can be extended into changing your reproductive organs. That means, becoming a transgender. Now, what happens when you become a transgender? Well, if you have the job done completely, it means you no longer have any reproductive organs that are functional. We've all heard the stories about so-and-so. This is the first man who ever had a baby. Well, no. The person who had the baby was not a man. It was a woman who, quote-unquote, transitioned into a female, and we've talked about this over and over and over and over. You cannot take a double X and create an XY, and you can't take an XY and create a double X. It cannot be done. And yet, we're pretending by using language, we've suddenly changed those rules. Okay, every individual. It doesn't say woman. It says individual. What do individuals include? Individuals include men, women, and children. This is part of the major problem with this, with issue one. Children are not left out of the equation. There's no protection for children in here. And if we have a strange mother or a strange father or a strange set of parents who say, well, my daughter is really a son trapped in a girl's body. There's no protection for that child in here. In fact, what this does is strip the protection from that child. Okay, let's go on.
Well, the new right is actually a series of rights called reproductive decisions. If this amendment were just about the right to abortion, it could have been written that way. But the words right to an abortion never appear.
How many rights are there in this amendment?
Five rights are listed: contraception, fertility treatment, continuing one's own pregnancy, miscarriage care, and abortion, which is...
Okay, let's talk about some of these rules. We'll go back to this in a second. Contraception. What are we talking about? Well, contraception, we can debate whether we're simply stopping ovulation or if we're stopping implantation of a fertilized embryo. One is a method to make sure that pregnancy doesn't happen. The other one is an abortion. If you're taking a pill that stops the implantation of a fertilized embryo or causes the uterine lining to strip off and have you expel this living human being who has not yet begun higher stages of development, like in the morning after pill, folks, don't kid yourself. The morning after pill is an abortion. if the egg was fertilized, we all know, those of us who have had, children know that, first time pregnancies are extremely rare, extremely rare. Multiple attempts generally have to get the timing right and that kind of thing. Fertility treatments, yeah, okay. There are real questions about some of those, but for the most part, that's not a problem. Continuing one's own pregnancy, well, that means also discontinuing one's own pregnancy. That the what is being said here is that a child has no right to live, and in fact, what it's saying is it essentially it automatically on its face questions the humanity of an unborn child at any stage. That's the core. That's the bottom line. When you hear things like the rape and incest in exception, ladies and gentlemen, does the child who is the result of rape have the right to live? The answer is yes. That has a God-given right to live. It is an individual. It is a person. And applying the death penalty to one of the victims is a really bad idea. And the same thing in an incest case. The individual child has the right to live. And the role of government is to protect life, liberty, and property. And that means that government has the authority to protect that child. That's why the rape and incest exceptions are removed under... There was a law passed that got put on hold until this amendment could see the light of day. I understand. Do I like the fact that a woman would be required to carry that life to the normal end, which is birth? No, I don't. I think it's awful, and I would support any method necessary to support her in this and to support any decision she made after the child is born. adoption, raising the child, anything along that line. What I don't support and can't support is violating the child's right to life by killing it. That's the bottom line. Miscarriage care. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing in Ohio law dictates anything about miscarriage care. This is one of the big lies that's being spread by the pro-issue one people, that somehow people would have to go out of state to deal with the results of a miscarriage. No. My wife and I have had a miscarriage. No law interfered with any part of that. It's ridiculous to think that if a woman has had a miscarriage, she's not allowed to go in and have a dilation and curettage, the so-called DNC. D&C. It's a dilation and curettage. It's a surgical procedure to basically take the dead tissue out of the mother, the dead baby, and any pieces of the placenta and that kind of thing out. Why? Because it's dead. It has to be removed or it could lead to an infection. This was never part of any law that's been passed that restricted miscarriage care. Never. Well, this is in there as an emotional appeal, a propaganda piece. Okay, let's go on. And abortion, of course, is listed last. Why? Well, gosh, you know, the most important parts of these other four things that we just talked about, and that abortion thing, that's last. We're not really that worried about it. In fact, I just saw an advertisement the other day that basically said issue one would not restrict partial birth abortion. Oh, absolutely it would. We're going to continue with the language. It would basically reallow partial birth abortion, which has not been allowed in Ohio for years.
Is last on the list.
Are there more rights than the ones listed here?
Since the language is insistent that the list is not limited to these five decisions or rights, what will stop a court from adding more items under this new human right?
Bingo. What will stop a court, because of the vagueness of the language, of adding to what we were already seeing in this amendment? What will stop a court from expanding it? We've already seen the court expand amendments well beyond the scope that was ever meant to take place. The 14th Amendment, for instance. There are people who have tried to do things to Donald Trump based on the 14th Amendment, the language of which was designed to keep former Confederates from doing certain things. The scope of the law was what were people who had served in Confederate government and that kind of thing. And, they didn't want them to be able to collect a pension from their army service, that kind of thing. And all of a sudden it's being applied well beyond what it was written for. In fact, years ago, I can still remember reading a book on it and said, those parts are defunct. They're non-functional. Well, guess what? Their life is attempting to be pumped back into them. Why? To deal politically with something that has nothing to do with anything. And yet, here we are. Who will decide? And the courts will, because the language is vague.
How many reproductive decisions are there? And who will decide what others exist? Perhaps not today, but in the future. Is cloning a reproductive decision? Are gender selection abortions a reproductive decision? Are gender altering surgeries reproductive decisions?
We just talked about that. The answer is yes. I will guarantee you that a judge will be found that will say that gender altering surgeries are a reproductive decision. All those other things mentioned, sex selection, abortions. Listen, folks, if you want to see the consequences of that, all you have to do is look at China with their one-child policy. China in the 70s, 80s, 90s had a one-child policy. In other words, if you got pregnant twice, the second child would be mandatorily aborted. Now, abortion is a right in China. So, a right. It's a privilege. There are no rights in China. What you're allowed to do is whatever the government says you're allowed to do. So, what does that mean? Okay. The what happened was, because boys carry on a family name and can be passed along legacies and that kind of thing, Chinese wanted to have boys. Why? Because boys could support them in their dotage and that kind of thing, and carry on the family name and carry, you know, and any possessions are passed to these boys. So the Chinese were aborting girls right and left all over the place. So there's a gross overabundance of boys and a gross shortage of girls. Well, folks, we all know that the general proportions are 50% girls and 50% guys. Girls and boys. Why? Because God's plan, man. We got to have just about as many girls as boys. This is one of the problems with laws that allow multiple marriages. You end up with guys, men who are successful, who not just successful, mega successful, who end up with all these females, and if they can marry them, man, this is why Solomon had 700 wives and concubines. A lot of them were political. A lot of them were, he saw someone, he liked her, and he would marry her. What did it do? Well, it left 699 other men with no woman to marry. Now, what does that do to a man when all the women have been taken up by someone else, and someone else has multiples? What does it do? It creates resentment. Which creates other societal problems. Very often it makes men angry and rebellious, which what happened after Solomon died? Well, all of a sudden the kingdom, Israel, split into Judah and Israel, two kingdoms. There were other factors involved, some of them having to do with Saul, who supported, there were internal tensions, but that reproductive rights thing has consequences. You end up with, gender selection surgery. There are other things on that list. Let's go back to it.
What about children?
This amendment only talks about individuals. There is no protection for children in any of the language. Whatever benefits are available to every individual are also available for children who legally are individuals.
Is there a provision made for parental rights?
Let's stop there for a minute. Who isn't an individual? They kind of gloss this over. Who is not an individual? A fetus. Why? Because a fetus is dependent upon its mother for life-giving nutrients and essentially a place to live while you develop. Okay? That is considered, as far as pro-abortion, pro-Amendment 1 people are concerned, a fetus is not an individual. Now, I've asked this question. I'm a biochemist. I've asked this question to people, and the answer is always got a protective device built into it. I always ask, okay, is this person, this unborn person, is it an individual? Well, no. Why? It's connected to me. No, that's incorrect. That baby has had its own genetic makeup since the one cell stage, since the time that sperm met egg and what they call recombination occurred, where the genes are flipped and the DNA creates a new individual, some parts from the father, some parts from the mother, and recombines those into one individual. That individual has been a unique human being with its own set of rights given by God. That's the bottom line here. So when we say individuals, they even kind of did it here. They left out. Now, I'm sure that they'll make it up here, but they left that out. And it's outside the thinking. People instantly, I think we should be able to abort for this or this or this reason. No. Now, that individual has rights. What if it's a highly damaged fetus and will not survive the pregnancy? You still don't have the right to take its life until it dies a natural death. And then you have the right to handle the miscarriage, the miscarriage treatment on your own. Why? Because that individual has passed away. And there's nothing wrong with having miscarriage treatment after the individual has died. In fact, if you don't do that, you're risking your own life. We know this. So this idea of therapeutic abortion to handle that, no, you don't. If that person is that badly damaged, you don't. All you have to do is wait and be monitored. Is that expensive? Yeah, it is. Why? I had a friend once, and we used to talk about these things, and he was very, very pragmatic about that kind of thing. And he said, pragmatic to the point of, he would talk specifically about premature babies. Why are we pouring our national treasure into saving these babies who will be a burden on the healthcare system for the rest of their lives because they have these developmental problems? Many of them have long-term health effects. And I said, why did God give us the treasury? Why did God give us the healthcare system? Why did God give us all these things that we can handle these things and give these people the best life possible? And you want to let them die? You want to essentially kill them before they can come into the system. Just leave them out of the incubator, let them die. There's something wrong with that, folks. There's something wrong with this mentality. We have to think of the unborn as an individual. Okay, here we go.
No, parents are not mentioned in this amendment at all.
Can the Ohio legislature modify or regulate this language?
No. The state is prohibited from interfering in any way with an individual's exercise of the right to reproductive decisions.
This is what we talked about before. This is an amendment to the Ohio Constitution, which means it enjoins the legislature from passing laws that would regulate any of this. It completely strips the legislature of the power that it has to protect life, liberty, and property, and says you can't step in and protect these individuals who are simply considered non-persons by virtue of their location, which is in the womb of the mother. That gives the mother complete authority over life or death of this person, this individual. This is the problem. And they made a very good point here. The Ohio legislature cannot modify. Now, what they can do is propose a new ballot or a new constitutional amendment that would be passed by ballot to change this amendment or to remove it. Do you understand how tough that would be? Extremely difficult. Okay.
Or interfering with any person or entity that assists an individual exercising any of the five rights on the list.
Okay, that is writing Planned Parenthood into the law, right there. You're not allowed, the legislature cannot interfere with any group that helps implement any of these quote-unquote rights. You cannot enjoin them. You can't. In fact, you could say, a judge might say, you can't defund them. I could see a judge going that far. You cannot defund Planned Parenthood because they are helping people implement these rights. And it wouldn't just be Planned Parenthood. There are other groups. Okay.
Is there some form of exception?
There is. It reads this way. Unless the state demonstrates that it is using the least restrictive means to advance an individual's health in accordance with widely accepted and evidence-based standards of care.
What's wrong with that? They're advancing that supposedly this is a restriction, which is no restriction at all. Because if you think about it, we go back to the individual in the womb. Is their health advanced by allowing an abortion? Well, certainly not. What are we talking about? We're talking about the right of the mother exclusively. And I'll agree with you, these rights are clashing. But you have to come down on the right to protect the individual life. That's where we have to go. What does that mean? That means the mother has to surrender her right up until the point where the child is born, and then she may do whatever she wishes except kill it.
What does that sentence even mean?
Great question. It looks like that's what a court will have to decide because there is no further definition or explanation given.
Time out. Ohio has lots of existing laws on the books regarding abortion, parental consent, and the protection of minors. What happens to these laws?
That is true. And all of those laws are statutes. A new right placed in the Constitution calls all of those laws into question. Every one of them is subject to review based on the new right of reproductive decisions.
Bingo. Folks, all the protections for children built into the law are suddenly up for grabs under if issue one passes. All of them.
Will abortion be legal throughout all 9 months of pregnancy?
The amendment does not use those exact words, but states only that abortion may be prohibited after fetal viability.
Okay. The fetal viability, this is the bugaboo, folks. This is one of those things that even in the pro-life circles, there are arguments about viability. Viability is an artificial, it's an artificial mark. Here's the problem with our artificial barrier, if you will, or artificial point, viability. The point of viability gets earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. Years ago, it was about 30-some weeks. Then it was 27 weeks, and then it was 25 weeks, and now it's 20. I think we've had babies that survived 22 weeks. Okay, how much further does it have to come down? Now, this what makes it artificial? The fact that the child is alive cannot be denied. That it is an individual cannot be denied. But that its dependence upon its mother somehow makes it the mother's right to murder it. That's not the way this works. And we all know, those of us who have had children all know that the baby's dependent upon us after the birth as well. We simply cannot let the child fend for itself when it's an hour old. We have to feed it. We have to keep it warm. We have to essentially give it the warmth of human contact. Why? Because babies that are removed from the warmth of human contact essentially become so psychologically damaged that sometimes they're become, if you will, mentally ill. So this is so vague. Again, abortion may be prohibited after fetal viability. Who gets to decide when the fetus is viable? viability is, again, is a false milestone.
Note, the law does not read that abortion shall be prohibited after fetal viability, so it may or may not be prohibited.
Who decides on the viability of an unborn child?
The definition of viability is left solely in the hands of the physician treating the pregnant individual.
Important point. Important point. An abortionist who is profiting from abortion can simply say that fetus is not viable. So let's continue the abortion. Well, that'd never happen. Of course it would. Folks, we have seen this over and over and over and over, that abortionists essentially are making huge profits doing this. We've had the testimony of nurses who have worked with these people. We've had testimony of doctors who have come out of the business. The fact is that abortion is a for-profit business. Planned Parenthood makes millions, and then they make millions selling the parts. People have forgotten this. Planned Parenthood does the abortions and then sells the bits and pieces for use in medical research, for stem cell therapies and that kind of thing, even though stem cells are readily available from cord blood, which you don't have to kill the baby to get. All you have to do is collect it at the point of birth from the umbilical cord, which is going to be discarded anyway. It's not, it's human tissue, but it's not living. It's not an organ. Folks, this is the worst form of just propaganda. Okay.
If that physician decides aborting a viable human child is necessary to protect the patient's life or health, no one can prohibit the procedure.
What are the rules on determining viability?
Fetal viability means the point in a pregnancy when, in the professional judgment of the treating physician, the fetus has a significant likelihood of survival outside the uterus with reasonable measures.
What are reasonable measures? How are they defined?
They are not defined.
Yes, there we go. More vagueness in the language. Reasonable measures, what does that mean? Well, remember I told you about my friend. As far as he was concerned, if the child couldn't breathe on its own, couldn't keep its own body warmth up and that kind of thing, nope, he was done. Just let them die. This is again, why viability is an artificial milestone.
This is to be determined by the treating physician alone on a case-by-case basis.
What is the definition of life or health of the patient?
No definition is given.
Bingo. No definition is given. Life or health. That can include mental health. This baby in me is driving me crazy. Therefore, I must be able to abort it. I can see the consequences. My parents cannot stand the idea that I'm pregnant. And therefore, I have to be able to abort the baby. These are all terrible reasons to remove the right to live from an individual.
It is solely the discretion of the treating physician. No one can challenge that decision.
Does this write abortion providers like Planned Parenthood into the Ohio Constitution?
Not by name. But Planned Parenthood or any other abortion provider can claim exclusive legal authority to define viability and avoid any form of liability for terminating the lives of viable children. The legislature may not pass a statute regulating viability because this amendment prohibits any such interference.
Will this language be challenged before the Ohio Supreme Court?
Regardless of how many challenges are brought, the Ohio Supreme Court is obligated by law to abide by the state constitution as approved by the voters of the state. They cannot...
Again, we talked about this earlier. Once this thing is in the Constitution, the Ohio Supreme Court cannot overturn it. It can't be done. They can't say the Constitution is unconstitutional, although we've had people that judges who attempted that at the federal level. And it didn't go. But they can't overturn that. You voted it in. Now, I don't mean you who were voting no. I mean you who were voting yes, voted it in, and therefore it becomes part of the Constitution, and the Ohio Supreme Court has its hands tied. The only thing they can do is decide if language on restrictive legislation that might be passed under the umbrella of this this amendment is constitutional or not. And the lower courts will have a lot of say on how the Supreme Court rules.
Unwrite what is written. Courts have been known to fill in the blanks, however. The court is obligated to protect and uphold every word of this language, no matter how poorly written or defined.
Who wrote this amendment creating the right to unlimited reproductive decisions?
Okay, this is a very important question, and you're about to find out that the answer is nobody knows. Now, I have a pretty fair idea who wrote it. It was a coalition, and it included Planned Parenthood and a number of quote-unquote reproductive rights groups and groups that are interested in gender transformation, the right of children, or the right of parents to decide their children need to be have their gender changed, which we've talked about before. You can't do. You can change the plumbing, but you can't change the genetics. But that being said, that's who wrote it. It was a coalition group. I've been involved in enough lobbying to know that's the way this works.
No one has claimed authorship over this language. A group of Ohioans submitted the petition language to the state. Requests to the lawyer representing these petitioners regarding the authorship of the amendment have not been answered to date.
Believe it or not, there are more questions than these regarding what these words will mean for the people of Ohio for generations to come. You can read the entire amendment at seethelanguage.com.
Voting on this amendment in Ohio begins October 11th and concludes on Election Day, November the 7th.
Before you vote on issue one, please see the language. Thank you.
Yeah, seethelanguage.com. That's the go to the website because what you will find out is you'll get a kind of a rundown just like I just gave you. And I've got one up here, full text of the proposed amendment, and they go through and mark it up. There's a PDF with the markup. And I would suggest you do that. It's very important that you know what's in this thing and you think through what you're seeing. The language that you see. And try to imagine how you would interpret the language and how a court might interpret the language because of the vagaries written in. All this stuff on fetal viability, there's a... There are sections in the amendment that will be written into the language of the Constitution of the state of Ohio. You may be surprised about some of this. They're introducing language to make it more and more and more vague, except when it comes to being able to restrict these rights. Then it gets more specific. This is the problem that we're running into, ladies and gentlemen. We cannot pass an amendment to the Constitution that is this frankly awful. I was hoping to get in some other things today. I'm going to run out of time before I can. I'm also going to talk about issue two a little bit because I'll be quite honest. Issue two is bad news. It's essentially recreational marijuana. It's bad enough with the current law where, you're required to go get a medical card so you can get your medical marijuana. I think everybody knows that the cards are kind of a joke. And by that I mean, they have a physician or a nurse practitioner or whatever available in a lot of these places. And you go in and say, well, I have a hangnail. Well, here's your marijuana card. It's a loophole that you got to jump through. What people are looking for is the ability to bypass the clinics. Now, again, I would say there are legitimate uses for marijuana. There are chronic pain, and nausea from chemotherapy, and glaucoma. All those things, but there are ways to deliver that, the effectiveness of the marijuana plant without the hallucinogen. And let's face it, the people who want to legalize, marijuana for recreational use want it for recreational use. They don't want to have the hallucinogen removed. And there are already loopholes. So, a federal law, a lot of times you'll drive around and some of the vape shops will have a thing that says they have Delta 8. Delta 8. Well, marijuana, the hallucinogen, generally speaking, in marijuana is Delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol. And the Delta refers to where there's a double bond. In the molecule, tetrahydrocannabinol. Well, Delta 8 is exempted from the federal laws, and does it have a hallucinogenic component? Yes, it does. I just did a little research on this. It's Delta 8 tetrahydrocannabinol. They've just simply moved where the double bond is, and yeah, now. They were making a lot of excuses saying, well, it's a milder high. Okay, fine. Whatever. You're still using it to get high. This is the problem we run into this is about getting high. We've already got problems with people that are driving and operating equipment and that kind of thing under the influence of alcohol, a legal drug when consumed properly, and an illegal drug when consumed improperly. We already have problems with people operating equipment and driving under the influence of marijuana and other drugs. Do we really want to take that chance? Now, again, that's a slippery slope argument. I happen to agree with you. It is. But the fact is that we already have trouble with young people with alcohol, with marijuana, and it does, as Catherine Wood and I discussed, it does create psychological issues. There is a psychological dependence from marijuana. There's a psychological effect, long-term effect, paranoia, laziness, a completely lackadaisical attitude. I've known many, 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 many people. I grew up in the 70s. I've known lots of people who basically developed terrible habits around their marijuana use. They had psychological dependence and they couldn't get by. I just can't face life. Just can't face life without being high. Folks, that's what we're looking for. We're already seeing the effect of this in our society right now. We really don't need to make it easier. Let's make people jump through the hoops to get the stuff that they want to satisfy their hunger for marijuana and such. Well, we're about out of time. Please go to www.seethelanguage.com and take a look at what they are talking about. They've got this thing from the Ohio Roundtable posted. Please, please, please go out to seethelanguage.com and go out and vote on Tuesday or Monday. Go vote no on issues 1 and 2. It's an imperative. It really, we need to stop this. And once it's written into the Constitution of Ohio, it'd be extremely difficult to get it back out. This should be a matter of legislation, not of amending the Constitution. All right. You know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.